Communism in Germany, Part 12, The Final Encounter. Another terrorist group was discovered in Bergscheid, where nearly 100 weight of dynamite was confiscated. In Schleswig-Holstein, at about the same time, written instructions for all revolt leaders were confiscated, which contained the following sentences. Quote, armed mass action in defence against the fascist terror. Disarm the fascist terrorist groups. Arm the workers and the poor peasants. Anti-fascist police officials. Join your brothers. Join the workers. Close quote. A circular issued by the local KPD group of Halle about the end of February was couched in similar words and stated that the chief aim must be to break up the terror. An order of the day, addressed about the same time to the military leaders of the local groups, contained the following instructions. Quote, do your very best to instruct your comrades in the use of weapons of all kinds, from a pistol to a machine gun. Close quote. In the connection with the discovery of a terrorist secret organisation in Herdeck, Schwerte, and Hagen, 43 communists were convicted of having been connected with direct preparations for overthrowing the government. They were well equipped with firearms, explosives and bombs, possessing 7 military rifles, 42 pistols, 8 live bombs, ammunitions and explosives. From all parts of the country, similar news was received. About the middle of February, a secret discussion took place in the quarters of a communist functionary in Seidenberg, at which it was decided to cut off the town from all connection with the outer world by destroying the railway lines, telephones and telegraph lines, to blow up the post office and to forcibly open up the frontier to Czechoslovakia. A similar plot was formed in Schönberg, Liebau, Silesia and Landshut, Silesia. The police in Recklinghausen, Westphalia, made similar discoveries. In Brocken, an AM organisation was discovered, which was diligently occupied with the manufacture of explosives and the carrying out of explosions. Explosives were discovered in no fewer than 7 hiding places. Also, in Hessen, the KPD developed in January and February of 1933 feverish activity in prohibited demonstrations and handbill distribution, informing fighting terrorist organisations and special fighting groups, which also indulged in practical activity in daily assaults upon National Socialists. On the 2nd of February, the communists in Württemberg attacked the factory in Mosigen. No fewer than 5 large thefts of explosives took place in Württemberg between September 1932 and the 1st of March 1933, even in such strictly rural districts as the frontier province of Posen, West Prussia. The preparations for revolution were keenly carried out. In Schneidenjul, a storm section of 50 men was formed and the men told to provide themselves with weapons. In exactly the same manner as in Silesia, the Schneidenjul terrorists received orders from headquarters to seize hostages, occupy the public utility works, and to cause as much destruction as possible. Similar information was received from East Prussia, where everyone was in hourly expectation of the signal to start. Altona was again one of the most dangerous centres of revolt, and not only the Red Front Fighters League, but also the Red Marine and the Anti-Fascist Fighting League were well organised and armed. The leadership lay partly in the hands of functionaries who had received military training in Russia. In addition to firearms, swords and daggers, these terrorist groups had provided themselves with glass bottles containing acids. All these groups were in a state of constant alarm. Some time after the Bloody Sunday previously described, an organized attack on a large scale was directed by a strong party of snipers against the SA premises at the corner of Schamburger and Weidenstrasse. No fewer than 200 terrorists marched up to cover the tracks of the assassins. On this occasion, a schoolboy named Hans Grack was killed. On the 20th of December 1932, a similar shooting attack was made on the SA premises in 155K Breitstrasse. About 50 shots were fired, the SS man Ludwig Schaff being seriously wounded. During February, Switelin, the leader of the KPD in Altona, together with Heinz and Reschke, the leaders of the RFB, systematically prepared the overthrow of the national government. All the terrorist formations and groups were armed and ready for immediate action. Special groups were charged with the blowing up of bridges, others with attacking police stations. From June 1932, till January 1933, no fewer than 36 cases of robbery with violence and of burglary occurred. In Hanover, too, the preparations for the revolution were complete. At the meeting of the leading functionaries on the 23rd of November 1932, the time for the rising was fixed for the day on which Adolf Hitler was to assume office. Towards the end of February, 3,500 detonators and a large quantity of explosives and fuse were stolen from the chief forester's house at Bad Grund. Shortly afterwards, a number of petrol tanks were forcibly opened, whereby about 200,000 litres of petrol were lost. A few days later, an attempt was made to put the overland high-tension lines out of action. The revolutionary troops of the KPD were taught all the very latest improvements in the art of street fighting. Quote, "In the case of street fighting, we shall have to depart, in many cases, from our methods as hitherto employed. Firearms and explosives no longer suffice. We must, in the main, employ chemicals." The police generally jump down from their lorries with such a lack of protection that they can easily and quickly be overpowered before they are able to do anything. By pouring strong salammoniac, sulfuric acid, or similar gaseous liquids out of wide-necked bottles or Metplat flasks over the policemen, they will immediately be put out of action. The more absorbent the policeman's coat is, the better will be the effect. Countermeasure, waterproof garment, so that the liquid will run off. In the case of police squads, having thus been overcome, the authorities will probably send out armoured police cars fitted with machine guns. These cars can be attacked in the following manner. Comrades moving in the crowd are provided with similar bottles filled with petrol, benzoyl, or other inflammable liquids, and when they are unobserved, throw these bottles at the cars. The bottles should be smashed by the impact. The bottles may also be thrown into the car from the houses. Beforehand, or immediately afterwards, other comrades should throw burning rags or handkerchiefs which has been soaked in petrol into the vehicles. The car will then immediately be enveloped in flames, and the quicker it moves, the more the fire will spread. The fire can be continually fed by throwing fresh fuel on the car. The throwers must therefore be judiciously placed in the streets beforehand. In the same way, police stations, municipal buildings, and barracks can be rapidly cleared. Empty milk tins with a hole in them can be well used for this purpose. If the attackers are systematically placed and according to plan, great confusion will take place among the crowd, and this is of great assistance in such a fight. Close quote. Those instructions in the technicalities of street fighting are taken from the frequently quoted books of Neumann and Kippenberger, which in their turn are based upon the teachings of Lenin and Marx, and on the regulations of the Red Army of Soviet Russia. Quote, "Hand grenades and bombs with great explosive force are very important mediums of attack against buildings. They can be used with great effect both against the living forces of the defenders and against machine guns, provided one can approach the gun unobserved, and also such minor obstructions as doors and gates. Every subgroup must be provided with sufficient hand grenades and bombs of great explosive force. Furthermore, each group must have a large supply of axes, jemmies, spades, rope ladders, which are necessary for fighting at close quarters, in and about houses, the breaking open of doors, the breaking down of partition walls, garden walls, staircases, etc., and thus making it possible to pass from one story or room to another. Attacks upon streets consist of the capture, step by step, of the respective blocks of houses and open places, as well as of the capture of and fight at the barricades. The attack must be carried forward in the street marked for attacks, or when the street is empty, by advancing through the houses, the yards, and the gardens. The former method is quicker, the latter safer, and causes fewer losses. The choice of the method remains with the leaders and depends upon the general situation and the supply of the necessary material. Close quote. On the 28th of February 1933, the secret revolutionary KPD headquarters issued the following general fighting orders to the terrorists and the fighting organizations. Dear friends, we have discussed the present situation with other friends and have come to a number of decisions. Herewith, we make you acquainted with those of interest to you. 1. In the fight against the fascist terror, make use of arms in self-defense. 2. Disarm the fascist terrorist troops. 3. Arm the workers and the poor peasantry. 4. Chase the brown shirts out of the labour exchanges and the working men's living districts. 5. Anti-fascist policemen, join your brother workers. 6. Meet fascist terrorism and assaults with protest strikes. Break down the fascist prohibition of demonstrations. Fight for the right to hold meetings, freedom of the press, and the right to demonstrate. In accordance with these instructions, attempts must be made in all districts to give examples of the wholesale disarming of SA men, SA premises, etc., and to make such action popular among the masses. Steps must be immediately taken to popularize the idea of self-protection, to form a regular patrol service, together with the Reichsbanner, SPD, or Christian workers, for the protection of the workers' residential quarters, the party and trade union premises, etc. Various methods of quickly mobilizing the masses must be employed in case of fascist attacks. This can be achieved by means of sirens, horns, whistles, etc. In connection with the other forms of mass fighting, the fighting demonstrations, mobilizations, and processions must be suitably practiced. On the very same day the order was issued for the highest state of alarm, it was only a matter of days or even hours before the signal for revolution was to be expected. 1. The Fighters' League is to be immediately divided into two formations. The comrades with weapons are to form one formation under the command of one of them, who was formerly a soldier. The comrades without weapons are to serve as couriers and pickets. 2. Not later than on Saturday, the Reich courier must be informed of the number of weapons available in your districts, whether carbines, rifles, pistols, hand grenades, and machine guns are available, and the quantity of ammunition for each. In addition, separate reports on the supply of explosives, which are to be reported to the defence organisation. 3. The Fighters' League, Verkin, the assumed name for the RFB, Party and RMS, must be immediately placed in the highest state of alarm. 4. Our comrades are to be told at once that the auxiliary police are to be wiped out with every means at their disposal when and where they are met. It must be made impossible for any fascist to walk along the streets. 5. The position of the Nazi barracks and all Nazi strategical points must be ascertained. 6. Uniform advance of the entire organization against the fascists and all their auxiliary organizations. 7. No pardon is to be extended to the Nazis. The local groups are to have a free hand in all actions, except in cases concerning the police force, their barracks, and all technical works. In such cases, permission must be obtained from the BI of the M section. Highest state of alarm, 5:03:12 midnight, arrival of the alarm report, positive instructions regarding operations in the Reich. Arrival of the Reich Courier. We expect that our instructions will be immediately carried out for the downfall of the Hitler government. The first signal for the armed rising had been given the previous night by setting fire to the Reichstag. This immense conflagration, which destroyed the dome and the plenary hall of the Reichstag in the night of the 27th to the 28th of February, 1933, glaringly illuminated the political situation in Germany like an enormous torch.
Tune in to Radio Stormer on thedailystormer.com.
If we, at this point, once more survey all the extensive preparations of the Intelligence Service and the OSNA, the AM organization, and the party in the state of self-imposed illegality, the Cheka and the RFB, the alarming of the Fighters League against the fascists, and the merging of the Red Mass self-protection organizations with the RFB, the immeasurable increase of the supplies of weapons and explosives, the countless armed assaults, and the increasing number of murders of policemen, SA and SS members, it will be realised that these plans of action form logical links in the chain of the communist preparations for revolution. In the long run, the KPD really had no other choice than to stake everything on the one card, and to attempt immediate revolt with all the means known to violence and crime. Their only choice was to sink or swim, i.e. defeat or victory. They decided to run the risk of a revolution and took to arms. Within a few days, the attempted revolt was crushed and the KPD destroyed. They had underestimated the strength of the National Socialist movement and consequently suffered the fate described by their foremost theorist Lenin in his Good Advice from Afar. Quote, "It is no good playing with revolution. When it is once started, one must be quite clear that one must go on with it to the bitter end." Close quote. The determination to hold out to the last was certainly not lacking. What was lacking, however, was the possibility to do so, for in the first one or two hours mentioned in the theory of the armed revolt, the decision had fallen, and the scales had turned in favour of National Socialist Germany. The destruction of communism was the result of the victory of the NSDAP. This victory, however, was not only the result of the defeat of communism. In its search for the real Germany, National Socialism found a corrupt system which was about to be overrun by Bolshevism. It could not and dare not be a witness to the way in which the people, thanks to the incompetency of the Weimar liquidators, became a prey to international exploiters. That system had to be removed in order to corner the enemy. Thus, the destruction of communism is not a justification, but a historical fact and a byproduct of the National Socialist Revolution, which, after all, is sufficient in itself to make the leader of this national movement unforgettable. If things are so, then also the final extermination of Bolshevism in Germany is not only a question of rigorous defence and police action, but principally a task for the positive building up of the National Socialist State. If the extermination of Bolshevism began with the National Socialist Revolution, it will end with its completion. Neither the capitalistically corrupt Social Democratic Party nor its confederates, the Centre Party, were in a position to oppose the closed system of Bolshevism with a similarly convincing system, to say nothing of the liberal middle class, whose tolerance was a result of their modest wish to be tolerated themselves. The total contrast to Jewish Marxist Bolshevism is exclusively represented by German National Socialism. It is the mighty antithesis and opponent of the Communist International in every fibre of its being, opposed to it in the sharpest contrast in the ponderabilities and imponderabilities of its purpose. It opposes the principles of class warfare within a national community. It abolishes the principle of self-interest by demanding public utility. It opposes the sham philosophy of economic materialism and godlessness with a pure idealism and belief in God, clarified by a full understanding of realities. All this is focused and caught up into one idea, the nation. Thus, from its desire to build up, it has become the bitterest enemy of communism. The Communist International in Moscow found a mighty master in German National Socialism. The great and decisive problems of Germany at present, the dividing of the people into classes, its proletarian shallowness and transformation into a shapeless mass of humanity, the exploitation and suppression of a nation through the imperialistic system of Versailles, and at the same time the advancing Bolshevism and decay, are inseparably bound together. Nobody could dare seriously to attack Bolshevism who did not know the way out of the social misery, disintegration, and slavery. That is why all others' aims and movements were bound to fail, and that is why National Socialism was bound to conquer. In principle, it is a German movement which has grown out of the present for the future. Nevertheless, it is not only Germany's own affair, because no other nation can be disinterested in whether the heart of Europe sinks into Bolshevism or sets about an internal and external healing process in an honest and inspired manner. Germany has taken the lead in the fight against the universal enemy and has thus undertaken a mission which it will not abandon until it has been accomplished. May other nations and states have sufficient insight and goodwill to recognize this and follow the German example. The destruction of the Communist International is a task for the nations of the entire Christian and civilized world.